Moby Hotel is not the name of the latest maritime-themed boutique inn. Instead, Hotel is the title of a new album from Grammy-nominated musician Moby.
Never know, but nothing less. Couldn't see that I had guessed. Couldn't see, couldn't stay away. Never even stopped to dream that I'd see anything. And the world just coming out so cold.
Then again, a hotel run by Moby might not be all that far-fetched. His 1999 album Play launched him into the music mainstream. All 18 tracks on that CD were licensed for use in commercials, on movies, or on TV. In the past few years, Moby and his business partner Kelly Tisdale opened up a successful tea shop in New York City called Teeny, and now they've launched a line of iced teas that could soon be distributed nationally. Along with this new album, Moby has published a book of recipes and stories about his tea shop. It's called The Teeny Book. If you have questions about making music or blending the perfect tea, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us email. The address is TOTN@NPR.org. Moby is currently on tour to support Hotel, and he joins us now from the studios of member station KCPW in Salt Lake City, Utah. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. I wonder, are you a road monster? Do you love playing out on tour?
It's kind of ironic because in the last 5 or 6 years, I figure I've done close to 1,000 shows. And to be honest with you, I don't really like touring all that much.
Really?
I mean, actually, you know, standing on stage and performing music, that part I love, but that's only about 2 hours of each 24-hour day. It's the other 22 hours of, you know, sitting on a tour bus or waking up in a parking lot or becoming far too well acquainted with Triple J road stops. So that's the side of touring that I'm not so keen on.
You've also, it would seem, and just reading about your tea shop, you've become a bit more of a homebody.
Yeah, against all my best intentions. I mean, it was funny when I was listening to you describing Kelly as my business partner. It seems like we have some big sort of almost Machiavellian master plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is what happened about 3 years ago, we woke up with hangovers and we had this sort of half-baked idea of starting a vegetarian tea shop in our neighborhood. And the truth is we had no idea what we were doing. And to a large extent, we still have no idea what we're doing.
Well, she's not only your business partner, she was formerly your girlfriend.
Yeah, and that was part of the challenge is we were boyfriend-girlfriend when we came up with the idea for opening Teeny, and we sort of broke up the day that it opened. So that's one of the sort of like the sub-narrative to the book is how to run a restaurant with your ex-boyfriend or girlfriend and not kill each other.
And not kill each other. And also not go under. I mean, this is an expensive proposition.
Yeah, I mean, it's very small, though. I mean, compared to a lot of other celebrity restaurants, Teeny's a very humble place. You know, if we have 25 people in there, we're very crowded, and it's, you know, decidedly unostentatious.
What is it about it that attracts you?
Well, first and foremost, it's a bright, sunny place, and it's in my neighborhood, and I can walk there. And Kelly, even though, I mean, her background is she worked in the Clinton White House, and she also worked at Human Rights Watch, both of which are very, you know, noble callings, but didn't exactly prepare her for opening up a vegetarian tea shop.
Mm-hmm.
But she's really risen to the occasion and done a remarkable job. So it's a beautiful place, and the food is great. And those are all the reasons why I love it so much.
And now you've expanded and to actually make it a business, Teeny, T-E-A-N-Y, that's the spelling of it. But this is now a brand of iced tea.
Yeah. Again, I have this strange, I don't know, predilection or penchant for throwing myself into businesses that I know nothing about. And so, you know, after throwing myself into the world of opening a restaurant, which I had no experience in, I've decided to throw myself into the worlds of publishing and bottled beverages.
Mm-hmm. And the publishing, of course, is the Teeny book that is about the tea shop.
Yeah, it's a hard book to describe because a lot of people have asked me what the book is about, whether it's a cookbook or whatnot. And I find it almost impossible to describe because it's really idiosyncratic. And I also run the risk of being immodest because I love this book more than I can say.
Well, let's get some callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, our guest is Moby. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's talk first with Jim. And Jim's on the line from Hawaii.
Hi.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, how are you doing, Moby?
I'm fine, thanks. Is that a dog barking in the background?
That's my dog, yeah.
What kind of dog?
He makes a lot of noise, but he's pretty channel. Listen, I have a question for you. Your music is a combination of samples from other recordings and then your own compositions. What's your creative process? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? And I'll take your answer offline.
Thanks for the call, Jim.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, because my background is actually quite conventional. I grew up playing classical music, and then I played in punk rock bands. And about 10 or 15 years ago, I decided that I wanted to make music all by myself in my bedroom. And to do that, I had to avail myself of a lot of, you know, electronic technology. And now when I make records, I mean, sometimes they start out with me just playing guitar. Sometimes they'll start out with a vocal sample. So really, every song has a different sort of creative genesis.
It's interesting. You wanted to make music by yourself, yet to present that music in any form, you've got to have a whole group, a band, a tour. You've got an entourage that goes around with you.
Well, it creates sort of a strange contrast where I make the records alone by myself in my bedroom, but then suddenly I find myself standing on stage in front of thousands of people playing with lots of musicians on stage. And sometimes the contrast is quite odd because some of the songs are very introspective and, you know, they were written at 3 o'clock in the morning in my bedroom studio in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And it's a strange contrast to then play them live in front of lots of people.
And we all know that things that make a perfect sense at 3 o'clock in the morning in your jammies, sometimes the harsh light of day, it's a different experience. I also wonder in terms of the business end, as the owner of a business, I mean, you're obviously now in charge of a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's been interesting because up until a few years ago, I had never run or owned a business, and I had this very naive, I don't know, ill-informed idea of what was involved in running a business. And now, having spent a few years running it, I realize it's a lot more difficult than I'd ever imagined.
Give those people a little bit more respect.
Oh, yeah. The moment anyone starts a business and is able to make it succeed or make it viable, they've earned my undying respect.
All right. Let's get another caller on the line. Craig is with us from St. Augustine in Florida.
Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I've enjoyed your music over the years, and I was curious. Could you tell me when in 80 or 99, when many of your tracks were used commercially, was that originally part of your business plan as you went into the music business, or was it just something that sort of magically happened to you?
It happened purely by accident. What happened was in 1999, I put out the album Play, and it went on to be quite successful, but when it was first released, no one was interested in it. I mean, it didn't get much radio support, and the press weren't really interested, and it didn't sell particularly well. In fact, when Play was released, I thought that it was going to be the end of my career because most people seemed so disinterested in it.
I read that you were going to go to architecture school.
Yeah, I had a conversation with myself before Play was released, and I thought, well, if this album's a complete failure, what else can I do? And my other love apart from music has always been architecture, so I thought I'd go back to school and study architecture. But
So what happened to make you be success? You know, to make it commercially used in advertisements.
Well, in Los Angeles, you have a lot of people who are music supervisors for movies and TV shows, and they were some of the only people who actually showed enthusiasm for Play when it was released. And so we found ourselves getting licensing requests for movies and TV shows and advertisements. And my feeling at the time was I had made a record that I was proud of and I wanted people to hear it. And I didn't have access to the more conventional means of distribution or conventional means of getting people to hear the music. So I had to, again, avail myself of more untraditional means such as licensing to movies and TV shows.
People have described that as a way of getting around the tyranny of radio and the normal methods of promotion and finding a new way to reach an audience. And in fact, other people have had success along the same lines.
Yeah, and I wish I could take more credit for it, but really we were just kind of clueless. And you know, there's that old expression, desperate times call for desperate measures. And so here I was in the summer of 1999, having made a record that I loved that no one seemed to be interested in. And the only interest I was getting was from music supervisors for movies, TV shows, and advertisements. So that's why I ended up licensing so much of the music.
Hmm. Craig, thanks very much for the phone call.
Okay, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks.
The new record out by Moby is called Hotel. Let's listen to another excerpt from the record. This is called Spiders.
Just had 2 hours.
Spiders from Moby's new album, Hotel. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I'm told that that track is an homage to David Bowie.
In large part, yeah, it's a tribute or homage to David Bowie. It's also kind of reflective of how disconnected I felt from American culture over the last year, especially after the results of the last election.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about that. I mean, this is, you know, obviously you were among those who worked, I think, to bring out the votes for the John Kerry campaign.
Yeah, well, I worked with the Kerry campaign and I worked with Move On and with America Coming Together. And I have to say, maybe it's because I live in Manhattan, so I have a skewed understanding of American politics, but I really thought that we were going to win. And when I saw how many people turned out to vote for George Bush, especially after how deceived and how lied people had been during the last election campaign, I was really dismayed. And I just felt very disconnected from the mainstream of American culture. And so the song Spiders, to some extent, reflects that.
Let's get another caller on the line. Let's go to Ariel. Ariel's with us from Denver.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know, where does Moby get his inspiration since it's so different and unique and stuff? And I was listening and I'm hearing something that sounds kind of like Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, like the whole anti-Bush and the doing stuff by yourself and stuff. So, compare yourself to him at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've known Trent Reznor for a long time, and I think that he and I have a lot in common in that, you know, for the most part, we make our records by ourselves, and we both grew up feeling fairly disenfranchised in kind of claustrophobic suburban environments, and politically, I mean, I don't know much about Trent's politics, but you know, I spent an awful lot of time in the last couple of years working, you know, maybe almost too hard in the world of politics.
Yeah.
And as far as where inspiration comes from, it's a really good question, and it's hard for me to answer because I get inspiration from so many different sources. You know, it can be anything from turning on the radio and hearing a fantastic piece of music or reading a wonderful book or going out to see a great live band or even just honestly, like, you know, sitting on the subway listening to the sound of, you know, the screeching of the brakes as the train goes around a corner.
Ariel, thanks very much for the call.
All right.
Thank you.
I wonder, you were talking about politics. Has the experience of being a businessman affected your politics at all?
I'm not sure. I mean, well, to be honest with you, I don't feel like I've had enough success as being a businessman to actually, you know, do justice to that question. Maybe if we talk in 5 years and if I've had a little bit of success, I might be able to answer it better.
All right, let's get another caller on the line. We'll talk with Susan, and Susan's with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hi, Moby. I'm a huge fan. I saw you in Detroit last Friday night. Worked my way up to the front row. We touched hands. It was all very exciting. It was a great show. I read that you try to live your life as Jesus would have, and I'm curious as to how you go about that and what your thoughts are on organized religion.
Oh, that's a big question. Yeah, I mean, I've been a – the best way I can describe it is a sort of idiosyncratic, humble Christian for a long time. And I mean, what I love about the teachings of Christ are specifically the fact that Christ stressed the virtues of compassion and forgiveness and humility and non-judgmentalism. And I don't want to be judgmental, but those are all qualities that I find in short supply in most, you know, right-wing organized religion. And I don't know, someone asked me the other day if I were able to sit down with George Bush, what would I ask him? And the first question I'd ask him, I would say, well, if you call yourself a Christian, how do you feel being responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis? And if you call yourself a Christian, how can you support the death penalty? Because at least in the New Testament I have, there doesn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm on Christ's part for killing innocent people.
Well, the death penalty presumes that they're not innocent, but...
Yeah. Or killing in general. I mean, like, if Christians are called upon to be humble, forgiving, and non-judgmental, I don't see a lot of humility, forgiveness, and lack of judgment on the part of most contemporary Christians.
Susan, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate
it.
Thanks.
And before we let you go, I had always assumed that Moby was a name that you had picked out, some symbolic importance, a childhood nickname, as it turns out.
Yeah, well, before I was born, my parents decided that if I were to be a boy, which I ended up being, I would be given the name Richard Melville Hall, supposedly because I'm related to Herman Melville. And so I was born, and they gave me this long name, and then they looked at me, and they realized that it might be a great name for, you know, a 40-year-old attorney or an accountant, but it's not such a good name for a six-minute-old child. And so my father gave me the nickname Moby, and now 39 years later, I'm saddled with this infant joke nickname.
Moby, good luck with the new record and with your new book.
Oh, thanks.
The record is Hotel. The book is Teeny Book. And Moby joined us from the studios of member station KCPW in Salt Lake City. You can hear three cuts from Moby's new CD on our website, npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.